Good afternoon. I'm Adam Ragusea, Assistant News Director at WFIU, and it's time for you to ask the mayor. Terre Haute Mayor Kevin Burke is here to answer your questions about city issues that concern you. The phone numbers to call to speak with Mayor Burke are toll-free 877-285-9348, and also a local call in the Bloomington area is 855-0811. If you prefer, you can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu, and we do check that address throughout the show, so please email in your comments and questions. Phone number to call is toll-free 877-285-9348. The email is mayor@indiana.edu. Welcome, Mr. Mayor. Thanks for beating the heat and talking to us today.
Well, thank you, Adam. We're delighted to be here again.
So let's get right into it, and let's talk about events from last night. The Terre Haute Police Department was one of a number of police departments throughout the state of Indiana participating in National Night Out, and you were there last night. How'd it go?
We were extremely pleased. It was a very successful event for us. We had a great deal of participation, not only from the public but from our exhibitors, and our park handled the crowd very well. The city staff did an excellent job, and we were able to pass out 6,000 hot dogs last night.
There were upwards of 8,000 people there, right?
Yeah, it was quite an event. The event has grown each year. I have to give credit to not only the Terre Haute City Police Department and all of their partners in this, but one individual in particular, Sergeant David Smith, is head of our juvenile division. And last night was about the kids and giving them a fun time, and I just really need to give him a lot of credit. Sergeant Smith headed up this effort and with a lot of help, but he did a remarkable job.
What's the message that you want Terre Haute residents to take away from the event?
Well, it gave us the opportunity for in a friendly, family-friendly, relaxed, informal atmosphere with a lot of fun and enjoyment. It gave them the opportunity to be up close with our public safety people. You know, I'm 51 years old, and I grew up with police officers being someone that you went to for help. They were, you know, there was that they were considered safety, and we've gotten away from that, unfortunately, to where a lot of our young people are afraid or see public safety people as someone that's not approachable. So it's very important for us to build that community relationship between our public safety people and the people that they have sworn to protect and to serve. And this was an excellent opportunity to do that.
Well, it's good to hear that the event went well.
Let's
move on to talk about infrastructure issues. There's a public forum tonight to talk about improvements to Margaret Avenue, and that's at Fuquay Elementary School at 6:30. What are you inviting folks to talk about?
Well, once again, this is our effort to get for communication. Communication is a two-way street. You know, you take input, but you also get back to people and talk to them about what that input has produced. And we continue to work on our Margaret Avenue corridor. We're very excited about 13th Street Phase 2 is going. I mean, that's on schedule. We're going to be at Margaret Avenue by the end of the year, and with that in place, we're going to be able to facilitate travel north and south and maybe produce some relief for 3rd Street. But Margaret Avenue corridor is very important to us. We've placed it at a very high priority, and this is another opportunity for us to talk about that entire corridor and in specific points and to get the community to feel like that we are communicating with them.
The proposal is to widen the avenue to 5 lanes, at least at points, correct?
Yes. I mean, this is based upon the growth of our community. As our community continues to grow and expand and our traffic patterns develop, you have to meet those needs. And having 2 lanes or at most a 3-lane intersection, it creates gridlock and frustration when you think you're just going to slip down south and take care of something, and you end up having to sit through three or four lights, that means that your infrastructure is overloaded. And our objective is to not overbuild, but to build to handle the capacity that we have, the demand that we have now, and add enough capacity that we can continue to grow.
Could you tell us a little bit more about how the 13th Street project is developing and what residents can expect in coming days?
The 13th Street Phase 2 project right now, they're getting ready to place curbs. They have an excellent example of what is projected. I mean, from Holman Street to Poplar Street, that width with sidewalks and curbing and drainage is what will be proceeding all the way to the through the intersection with Margaret Avenue. And some alignment changes to where that traffic will be able to flow. And they'll have the opportunity to go from Margaret to Poplar on four-lane arteries.
We have an email here from Margaret, and it asks this. First, a heartfelt thank you for new sidewalks in Farrington's Grove. They're making a big difference. We also love the Colt statues around town.
Yes.
My question involves street sweeping. We live on 7th Street, which tends to collect a lot of stray litter. I have often seen street cleaning trucks needing to drive around parked cars, which are blocking its way, thereby leaving the debris in the street. In previous places I've lived, residents were asked to park on one side of the street or the other for a few hours on street sweeping days so that the trucks could operate more efficiently and the street stayed cleaner. Is this something that could be implemented in Terre Haute?
Well, I think a very simple answer is certainly it can be implemented. The first thing that we have to do is, and we're working on that, is improving our fleet of street sweepers to the point that we can meet a schedule, that we have the equipment and the manpower to say, okay, we're implementing that type of an arrangement and be able to meet that, and we're very close to having that. The challenge on 7th Street is alternate places to park. If we tell one side to move to the other side, the challenge is having adequate alternative parking spots and being able to do that. To send your street sweepers down through there without having to make the big loops around parked cars. We've researched this. There's other communities where they want both sides cleared for a certain period of time, and that's just a tremendous inconvenience. And we're not through with this. We're not. I certainly want to get to the litter and the trash and the debris and to get that cleaned up. I'm hoping that if we can, with what we're doing on 13th Street, if we can relieve some of the pressure as far as traffic on 7th Street, that between some relief there and through working with Farrington's Grove Homeowners Association, that we could implement some kind of a schedule and to do that. It's certainly not out of the question.
Of course, even if that traffic is relieved to an extent and some more adequate parking is provided, still it's always difficult to really enforce that kind of rule. And you're going to – I mean, whether someone follows the rule or not, the car still remains there when the street sweeper comes by. And I don't know, you're not going to just plow it right over.
Well, I know in Milwaukee they will tow the car.
Sure.
And I don't want to get to that point. I don't know that I would much rather look at it from a cooperative standpoint. One of the things we found, especially for like our Wabash Avenue cleaning, we bring our crews in very early in the morning, like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and we get the opportunity to do that. In a residential area, you don't have that opportunity.
Sure.
Because at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's when there's the most cars there. So the residential area street cleaning is a challenge. It is.
Let's see. We've got another email here that also deals with, I think will implicitly deal with infrastructure issues, and it's from Missy. It says, ISU and Rose Hallman students will be coming back in a few weeks, and are there any back-to-school concerns for the area?
Well, we welcome the students back. I mean, I always look forward to the students returning. It certainly lowers our median age. It helps with enthusiasm and some vitality. I know our merchants enjoy that disposable income coming back into our community. We do face some challenges with all of our projects that we have going on. We're certainly adding more vehicular traffic to the mix. We're just hoping that as we continue to build our pedestrian and trail system, that some of our college students will take advantage of that, and we'll be opening 4th Street very soon here, and I'm hoping that trail on 4th Street will entice maybe some of our students, faculty, and staff that live in, let's say, the Farrington's Grove area to use the bike path to get to campus and back. $3 a gallon fuel is also another incentive for that. We'll be implementing our mass transit, hopefully, our agreement with ISU. You know, so we're trying to do some things to alleviate as much as possible, but we don't want to slow down the progress, and we're going to continue to ask people to be patient with us, if you look at the 5 big projects that we have going on downtown and on campus, and with the 6th to follow with the Student Rec Center, there's going to still continue to be a period of time where we're going to have restricted traffic flow, especially downtown and surrounding, and we're just going to have to work with that.
Obviously, the public transportation partnership is there, but do you see any other opportunity for the city to work with, say, ISU to provide students with more incentives to leave their cars at home when they come to Terre Haute for school?
Well, I mean, the concept of leaving their cars at home, coming to ISU, using mass transit, is our ultimate goal. America has fallen in love with their vehicles. We know that. Bloomington is as an example. Bloomington's ahead of us a little bit with the use of mass transit. They're more than a little bit ahead of us. The situation that we face is that finding the wherewithal to be able to move people not only where they want but when they want. It is quite a cultural shift to say you need to time your travel to meet this schedule rather than just going out and getting in your vehicle. But another part of that concept, Adam, is us moving to where people are willing to stay here over the weekend. Our students willing to stay over the weekend because a lot of them bring their car here so that they can turn around and go home on the weekend.
Sure, but I imagine the city would like to keep that disposable income right there in the city on the weekends.
I mean, I'd love to steal their cars, you know, and make them stay here. But then part of that is our job of being they're our customer. Those college students are our customers. We have to provide an incentive or an attraction to get them to say, I think I can stay there over the weekend, and maybe I don't need to bring my car back. A group of us will maybe carpool in, and you know, rather than putting things in place, Adam, that make it punitive if you don't do it, I would rather find a way to entice. A carrot works much better; is much more user friendly than a stick.
Well, let's hope that a few ISU students were tuned into that conversation just then. I'd like to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Terre Haute Mayor Kevin Burke. We have about 15 more minutes of the mayor's time this afternoon. The phone number to call to speak with Mayor Burke is toll-free, 877-285-9348. A local call in the Bloomington area is 855-0811, and you can send an email to mayor@indiana.edu. Now, Mr. Mayor, let's switch gears for a second, and let's talk about an event that occurred last week. It was that the Vigo County Commissioners approved a transfer of about 39 properties to the city's Department of Redevelopment. Could you review for us how those properties, many of which are in the downtown, came to be owned by the county and what the city's intentions with those properties are now?
Well, at the very baseline of motive here is we want to get those properties into private hands as much as possible. The objective of government is not to own property. because then we don't get to collect taxes on it, and it doesn't help lower everybody's tax load. So we appreciate the opportunity to work with the county and for them to transfer those properties basically from their jurisdiction into our redevelopment department so that we can take those and either maintain them or put them into our housing programs and dispose of those properties. Dispose of sounds like that we're, that sounds a little negative, but that basically make them available to the private sector in a fashion that they become not a burden to the taxpayer, but a asset to the taxpayer by helping reduce or mitigate the tax load. And some of these properties may very well be a situation where you go to the two property owners that are contiguous and say, this is not a buildable site. It has value to the two owners, and you make it available to them in a fashion that they can take ownership of it. And even more importantly than paying taxes on it is they take over the maintenance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that improves the entire neighborhood, because that's one of our challenges, is that unbuildable piece of property that's difficult to maintain being an eyesore on a block in a neighborhood. So, and then you go, okay, who owns it? Well, it belongs to the county. Well, the county has a large responsibility of maintenance, and you go to the county and say, you've got this little piece of property in here in the city you need to maintain. Well, it's not very efficient to expect the county to come into the city to take care of a lot, especially when the city's taking care of lots maybe a block over. So even if we can't dispose of the lots, we can certainly be more efficient with the taxpayers' money in the maintenance of these properties. So, I mean, it just makes a ton of sense for the stuff that's inside the city limits for us to take care of that.
Well, some of these properties are right up against each other, are they not?
Yes. I've not reviewed the entire list.
Sure.
I mean, But
there are opportunities for development here.
Absolutely.
And there are incentives for developers. Could you
Absolutely.
Talk about those?
We have a home building program where we have made this available to developers and home builders, where we incentivize them coming inside the city limits and doing infill housing, replacing missing teeth is the way I like to look at it. putting the smile back, because we're putting the pieces back together in a neighborhood, and we've incentivized that to the tune of, I mean, there's the potential there of $12,000 to $15,000 of incentives for a building site. The challenge, and I mean, there's no challenges, there's no fun, Adam. I mean, part of what makes this fun is it's stuff that other people find difficult to do. The challenge is doing that in a fashion that a person can get financed, purchase the home, and become a homeowner. And I like our chances. We're finding some really creative ways to do that. And moving people into home ownership, I mean, that's a hoot. I mean, that's what we need to be about doing, because that homeowner will take care of that property, and add personal wealth and all that. And home ownership is a key to, living in America. So it's an exciting part of what we do. In figuring out a way to put back the missing teeth and to move people into home ownership.
And as you mentioned, of course, some of those properties may end up being integrated into the city's public housing operations, correct?
Public housing, I can tell you that HUD's approach to housing is home ownership. They are very appreciative of our efforts in moving to home ownership programs. So building public housing and creating subsidized rent opportunities, they're not near as enthusiastic about that as our efforts in getting people into home ownership.
That's interesting. Let's move on to some other issues of economic development from that. Senator Bayh will be bringing his the job fair that he hosts, the Indiana Job Fair and Small Business Summit, to Terre Haute, to the ISU campus on the 23rd. That's something that's been pretty successful in past years, is it not?
Yes. Senator Bayh has made small business and employment in small business a significant part of what he does, and it's refreshing to hear someone in our delegation that it's encouraging and refreshing for them to recognize small business. In my former life, I was a small business owner, we that are in small business know that small business is the number one employer in the nation. Small business employs more than anybody else. And it's through small business that you broaden your base, you increase your footprint, and create more stability in your community. I mean, time and time again, we see that the challenges that come into a community when a very large employer moves out or shuts down, communities can become very dependent upon that major employer. When you have a good, healthy small business community undergirding those big employers, it just creates a lot more stability. So we're pleased that the senator wants to focus on small business and find ways to support that. And there's been some pretty unique small businesses that have been showcased during his job fairs.
And apropos of that, for all of the exciting new business developments that we see happening in Terre Haute, often there's a sad story as well, and one of those is in the news again this week, which is that the International Paper Mill has announced its closing date of October 1st, and that's expected to put, I think, about 170 people out of work. There had been talk of the city trying to facilitate the sale of that property to another operator in some form or another. Are those efforts lost?
Adam, I want to try to be as polite as possible here. Those efforts have failed and not gained any traction due to business concerns of International Paper. International Paper has a very successful mill sitting there. I mean, this is a mill that has been very profitable and continues to be very profitable for them, but it's not big enough. And their concern is that profitable mill ending up in the hands of a competitor. And from a business standpoint, I certainly don't begrudge an entity not wanting to help its competitors. But when you're on the other side of the fence as a community, it's very disheartening, and it's a heartache when you have infrastructure and a facility that employs people very well and is profitable, but has simply been deemed too small for their strategic needs, and we've not been successful in getting any conversations with International Paper about us facilitating the continuing of that plant or that mill. One of my son-in-laws is employed at International Paper, and so we have intimate knowledge of what this means. But then we're very fortunate that the environment in Terre Haute is that there's a lot of employment opportunities out there for the people of International Paper that have proven themselves to be a talented workforce. They've continued to produce at a very high level during the challenging news that have come down. And, as a community, we can be very proud of those employees at International Paper because when they were told that they were on the bubble, they had a choice of giving up or really fighting, and they've made it. They have produced at a very high level and proven that that's a profitable mill. This is just one of those big business decisions that's very hard to swallow.
I remind our listeners that we're speaking with Terre Haute Mayor Kevin Burke, and we have just a couple more minutes of the mayor's time this afternoon, but there is time for another question if you'd like to call in. Toll-free, 877-285-9348. Mr. Mayor, let's talk about upcoming items on the City Council's agenda, one of which is a proposal from Councilman Norm Loudermilk calling for the appropriation of about $500,000 to build a new animal control facility or to augment the existing shelter with a substantial new wing. And it's a plan that I believe was not developed in consultation with the Animal Control Commission. Is it something that in any respect has your support?
Short answer is no. This administration has been very clear that throwing money at the animal control challenge is not an approach that we feel is prudent. Throwing money at something has never been our approach. The opportunity to increase the ability to collect, house, and euthanize animals has always been there. I mean, you can always build bigger shelters and euthanize more animals, but that's not our objective. Mm. I have vehemently opposed spending money to kill more animals. And the objectives that we've undertaken through pet adoption, through spaying and neutering, is the long-term cure to our problem. Far too often there is a tendency to want to treat symptoms and not get to the cure. Building bigger facilities, and see, $500,000 to build a facility, I want to ask the question, where's the money going to come from to staff that facility? Mm-hmm. And all of the operating costs. So people thinking that they can spend $500,000 and solve the problem, no, they won't. Once again, spaying and neutering the animals allows us to fix this problem and to cure the problem. Yes, it will take more time. Yes, we will have to endure the discomfort of this problem not being addressed in a dramatic and flamboyant way, but it's a cure for the problem. This is not an animal problem. This is a people problem. And us providing the means for people to have their pets spayed and neutered reduces the breeding pool and reduces the number of animals we have to go pick up. And that's the answer, not building a bigger facility so that we can kill more animals.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we have just about 60 seconds left. Anything else coming up in the city that you'd like to tell us about, or any advice that you have for Terre Haute residents for dealing with the really very dangerous heat that we're looking at this week?
Well, stay hydrated, stay cool, but this is called the end of summer. We always have it. I would just encourage our people to rest up as much as possible in the next few weeks, because September is always a dramatic, exciting time in Terre Haute. This month of September is jam-packed with things to do. Every weekend is double and tripled up on things that are taking place. We have our kids going back to school next week, and it's just a real exciting time to be in Terre Haute. And I really encourage everybody to celebrate and enjoy themselves. It's just a delightful time to be in Terre Haute.
All right, Mr. Mayor, well, we look forward to talking with you again in September. And this has been Ask the Mayor with Terre Haute Mayor Kevin Burke. I'm Adam Ragusea. Join us again next Wednesday, that's the 15th, I want to say, with Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan will be our guest. For producer Aaliyah Mood and engineer Mike Paskash, thank you for listening.